You can't censor us.
This is Uncensored Parenting, talking about the shit no one else will. You've got questions, we've got perspectives. Coming up on today's show, we have Victoria Angulaya, an expert in the field of sex education. When we sat down with her, we discovered that sex education is so much more than just talking about sex. That teaching your child bodily autonomy will actually protect your child as they grow up. We also learned that providing kids with the proper sex education can actually delay sexual activity, and what you should avoid talking about when you're talking to your kids about sex. And of course, you don't want to miss out on Victoria's best parenting advice on sex. Welcome to Uncensored Parenting. Hello, everyone. On today's episode, we have Victoria Angulaya. She is a digital sex educator at Advocates for Youth. She works on the Project Amaze, which is an online resource for families to access appropriate sex education. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Health Science from Townsend University. Victoria, thanks for joining us today. I would love for you to share more about yourself and your passion for supporting youth.
Thank you so much for having me. As you mentioned, I'm Victoria Angulaya. I would say my passion for just working in sex education started in a very interesting way. I was a wellness care educator in college, and I actually kind of fell into it in the sense that I went to the health center looking for one thing, and then I found the person who was in charge of the wellness care educator program there. And I've always just been really interested in like how the body works. I'm a dancer. I came from like a performing arts background. So I've just always been intertwined with like my body. And then as I went through college and just started to learn more and took like my first human sexuality class, I just was like, why don't we know these things? Why don't we teach these things? And then as I got further into my career, I just noticed that like there was just a lack of sex ed for youth just in general. I think back on like my own high school sex ed and just like what my siblings were taught, we weren't really taught much. And youth really want to know this information. And it's like there are only a few people in the world who are going to actually give them the honest and accurate information that they need and want. So I think that's where my passion kind of like started. And it's just fun working with them because you learn so much more with them, and you are always a student and a teacher at the same time when you work with youth.
Wow. I thank you so much because as a former educator, this was something that was talked about a lot, of the lack of sex education in classrooms. And so thank you for your contribution to this work. All right. So on the topic of sex, what is the best age to start a discussion with your kids about sex?
Great question. So I always say that it's never too early to start. Sometimes I try to like stay out of age ranges because people get so like stuck on the number, which is important, of course, when we talk about consent laws and things of that nature. However, I would say it's never too early. I know that there's research out there that says that you can start as young as someone who is like 18 months old and just start by like giving them the correct, anatomically correct names for what their genitalia is. So instead of calling like a vagina a kitty cat or calling the penis your wee wee or things in that nature, you actually say like, you know, it's your vagina, that's your penis. This is how you clean your vagina. This is how you clean your penis. And it's really important that the kids learn that at a young age, because then they just get more comfortable as we go on. And so, you know, you said you're a former educator. Whenever you get to that awkward part, regardless of what topic you're teaching, you always, my thing is I'm always like, all right, everyone, we're going to spend the next 5 minutes saying vagina and penis and breast and butt and anus and getting people comfortable with it. And people who like are used to that, it's still always going to be funny and silly. We even laugh ourselves, but just getting them comfortable with using the correct terminology of like what your reproductive organs are called or just what your body parts are called is really important. Because I think when people hear sex, they automatically think about engaging in sex and pregnancy and things in that nature, but they always forget about like just basic autonomy. And I think that's why we have Amaze Junior. So Amaze Junior is a little bit for like kind of like the younger kids, maybe like I try to stay away from age range. I'm not going to give an age range, but definitely the younger parents and their younger kids. If they don't want their kids to watch the video on their own, we definitely have a Maze Junior for like those like kind of elementary school age range. Because then some of our videos sometimes could be for like middle school and then higher and things like that.
Okay, so when talking about you know, the body autonomy and all of those appropriate names, when do you start having discussions around pleasure, or if they become curious about it, or what is your suggestion around when? Like, when are signs that they're ready to start talking about those topics?
I would definitely say once you feel like you've kind of provided that child with just, you know, like basic anatomy, they know what consent is, you've talked to them about like self-exploration or masturbation, they've talked to you about it, kind of like when we've kind of move past those thresholds, I think it's really important. That's when you can talk about like pleasure and just saying like, you know, sex isn't something that's just done as one way to reproduce. It's not something that adults just do that they say you're supposed to do and things of that nature when you get older. But also like it can feel good. Like another reason why people have sex is because it feels good and it's something that they enjoy doing it either by themselves or with a partner or partners. So I think like once you kind of have, I would say not basic, but just like some of those fundamentals of sex ed, of, you know, anatomy, pregnancy, reproduction, talking about STIs and STDs and how those are transmitted. Also just talking about like what healthy relationships look like kind of really covering a lot of those bases. You can kind of weave pleasure into all of it. I know like some school boards are like, yes, teach them everything, but don't teach them that it feels good or things in that nature because they don't want to encourage sexual acts. And that's not always the case. So I would just say, like, you know, even if there's like a 5-year-old who you notice might start tapping their chest a little bit more, rubbing it more, and you know, like, okay, like I see that you've been rubbing your chest, or I see that you've been rubbing your vaginal area, things in that nature, and it probably feels good. But then, you know, teach them like there's a place and a time when these things are supposed to happen. So you can always speak on it. It doesn't have to be like, all right, you've turned 16. There's a car, there's your 16 candles, and now let's talk about pleasure. Because I think when you leave it out of the conversation throughout, and then it's also just like, you know, does your child even know what the actual word pleasure is? Like, if they don't know what the word means on its own, you don't want to give them too much information more than they are asking for or what they actually like need at that time.
I love that piece that you said of, you know, anatomy, consent, and that leads to this. It's like a lot of time we skip over, you go anatomy and straight into it. And so I guess, you know, why do parents often avoid this conversation with their kids?
I would say parents usually avoid this conversation because they automatically think about like having the talk or the lack of a talk that they had with maybe their own parent or like adults in their life. They also think that like having this conversation or engaging in these conversations is automatically going to like, and their child is just going to start engaging in sexual activities, or like they feel like they're going to expose them to too much, which is actually the opposite. There's so much resources out there and research out there that says like when youth get the proper sex ed, it actually delays their sexual activity. So I think that a lot of times adults are kind of having that talk with themselves because now they have to be like, you know, accurately correct. It's not like just talking to your friends or talking to your peers. Now you're talking to someone who's seeking your advice and like your advice will impact them. So it's definitely like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to give them too much. Now I talk to them and think their child is going to go out and have sex forever. And it's just like, no, starting these talks, especially at a young age, like we started talking about, will then allow your child or equip your child to start having like better decision-making skills. They definitely have a better sense of bodily autonomy, knowing what consent is, but also knowing how to like protect themselves. Because at the end of the day, we do live in a world where children oftentimes are abused. So you want to make sure that they are aware of like what personal safety looks like, how to maybe avoid viewing sexually explicit media because it's not real and it can harm their perception on like what real sex is or what sex ed is and things in that nature. So I think there's just a lot of fear, and that's why parents avoid it. And then also, there isn't like a parenting 101 class about how to teach your child about sex. There are lots of books and resources like Amaze, but like it's not there in the sense where it's like, oh, you're 3 months pregnant. This is how you're going to have a talk or something like that.
Yeah, I really hear you saying that sex education is just not talking about sex alone. It's really talking about relationships, your body, consent. Mm-hmm. So hearing that, like, why is this important that we normalize this at home and talk about it to our kids?
I would say it's really important to just normalize it at home because the home is where we learn a lot. I know people go to, you know, you go to school, you go to daycare, all those things like that. But honestly, it's what you see done in the household, what you experience. So not what it said, but what you actually live and experience. And then also social media. It's like the parents in the household, whoever's in the household with the kid, and then what they see on social media are really like the first two, I say like platforms where they're learning. And then you have school, of course, but it's very easy for information to just get lost in school because information could be outdated. There's bans and restrictions now about what can be taught. So in the household, it's just really normalizing. Like, what I'm always going to say it, that's probably like my number one thing I stress the most when it comes to sex ed is bodily autonomy. Like, your body is yours. And then just very open and honest conversations. And other ways that it could be normalized in the home is like practicing it. So we talk about consent a lot. I'm like, your body is yours. We talk about consent. And then the holidays roll around and then an aunt comes over or uncle comes over and they're like, oh, I haven't seen you so long. Let me give you a hug or a kiss. And then you're like, go hug your aunt, go hug your, go give your uncle a kiss on the cheek or something like that. And the kid is like, I don't want to. And you're like, go, go, go. That's not teaching them body autonomy. Yes. Yeah, so I'm like, oh, you know, today Sarah doesn't want to give you a hug. I'm sorry. Maybe you can ask her later, maybe, but we're teaching her to, you know, do what she feels comfortable. So I feel like actually, like, just constantly having conversations and then making, like, actually practicing those things in the household really helps to normalize the sex education. Because if you're seeing it, you don't realize that that may not be happening in another household or, like, it's uncommon. You'll think it's very common. The same way, there's probably a million things you do in your home, I do in my home, that I think is common because that's how I was raised.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think about we taught our kids that you have the right to decline a hug or, you know, any kind of touch. And it was a challenge for people, especially family members, to receive that no. And we did a lot of talking about it. We had the conversation of like, it's not you. It's okay. It's just that they don't, you know, want to hug you. And now our kids have no problem saying like, no, thank you. I don't want to hug you. So
And it's beautiful to watch them with other kids now. Sometimes I'm like, hey, do you want a hug? Instead of just going in and grabbing it. It's like the kids sometimes are just like, what do you mean? Do I want a hug? Of course I do. And it's like, yes, but they're teaching their friends through our practices in our home how to move out in the world. And it's kind of that ripple effect going out, which is kind of cool to see.
It's something so small like that really can change everything. Because I think a lot of times, like, we just came off of our Youth Activist Institute, and we had like a bunch of youth way older, typically like I think from like age range like 14, 24, come in and do like a 4-day week of activism. But we talked a lot about just like how people really just disregard the existence of children as their own. They're always looked at as kind of like property, like, this is my child, I own this person. Possession. And like, yes, you are the caretaker, the sole provider, the guardian of this child. But like, imagine if you walked into the room, what do you do when someone tries to come up to you and hug you? You move away. So why are we forcing this kid to hug this person? Because you probably don't want to hug the same person.
Right.
Or you moved away from people when they've tried to hug you in the same sense. So yeah.
Wow. Are there some things that I should avoid during these conversations with my kids?
I would say, great question. I would definitely say we can like avoid over answering their question. And the best way is to, like, do not go into more detail until they ask. So I think, like, sometimes because we might know more than the kids that are asking questions, we then, like, go into, like, this whole history lesson. And then, like, they always say, like, there's always a running joke, like, when you ask your parent a question or you tell a funny joke to your parent, and then now it's like a lecture. Like, sometimes that's important. Yeah. Sometimes that's needed, and then other times it's not. So I would say, like, trying to keep your answers as closely related to the question as possible. And if you need to say, like, okay, like, we might have to break that down, or like, yeah, like, we need to break that down. Like, if someone talks about, like, you know, how does someone get pregnant, right? There's so many different ways. So you can be like, okay, there's so many different, is there like a specific way? Did you hear something? Like, really gauge what they already know to then try to, like, figure out how to respond. Cause I think some people often, like, get stuck and then they just start sharing way more than what they need to know. An example is, like, I know a young girl, she was at a doctor's office, and they had told her mom, like, you know, she's probably going to get her period a little bit on the earlier side, like, when she's 9 or 10. And she was like, what is that? What do you mean I'm about to get my period? And then the doctor just went into, like, this huge elaboration of just how the 4 cycles and how it works and all of that. And it was just more so, like, that 8-year-old only really needed to know, like, your body's going to go through some changes and you're going to see some blood leaving your vagina. And once you get closer to that time, you'll learn, and people will provide you with, like, ways to help yourself and menstrual products to use and things like that. Like, they did not need to know about, like, ovulation at 8, unless it was like, okay, today we're going to talk about our periods, and it was a specific time. But in that moment of the question, it needed a little bit of a more simpler response. And I think sometimes we just overshare and overexplain. And then something else I would say is avoid spreading inaccurate information. So I think, like, sex ed is constantly evolving and changing as human beings, and human sexuality gets explored more, and we learn more like, better practices and things like that, or things that, like, were best practices are now outdated and stuff like that. So I would say, like, trying to just spread inaccurate information, because, like, inaccurate information, as we know in the world, like, the what's not true spreads faster than what the actual truth is. So, like, if you're not completely sure, I don't know is always the best answer. As an educator and teacher, I'm always like, if you ask me a question, I don't know, I'm going to tell you straight up, I don't know. And then I might try to find it or find someone else that knows, like, pointing them to the right direction, pointing them to a maze if we have their question answered. But I definitely think, like, those two things would probably say, like, if there's anything to avoid. And then, like, you know your child, like, you know your child, if you know your child's going to probe and, like, ask for more and more, then maybe you can give them way more detail. But if you know your child is very, like, I just want to know, like, 2-word answer, and it's just like, okay, well, this is all you asked, I'm going to give you that, let me know if you want to know more, because there could be more, but if you don't want to know, I won't share with you right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think about, so my son the other day asked me about an experience. He's like, you know, what was your first experience like? And there was a moment of like, why are you asking me this? What is appropriate to share with your kids in terms of experiences if they're asking about it? Like, do you share your opinions and experiences? Does it depend on, you know, I mean, I know that it probably depends on your child, but what to gauge a little bit of support here, like, what would be appropriate to share with your kids when they're asking questions like that?
And I just want to make sure I understand the question correctly. So, like, if you're in a scenario, like, if your child came up to you and was like, hey, have you ever tried, like, a ribbed condom or something like that? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll be honest with them. I would assume at this point they know that you have had sex or sexual beings if they're coming to you about these questions. So, and if they are coming to you with these questions, that means they trust you and they value you and they value what you're going to say to them. So that's already a really green flag, like great thing that they're coming to you and feel comfortable, because most people are just going to go online or ask their friends. So I think like, take that as honor. Like if a person comes up, if your child is coming up to you asking you direct questions about an experience or trying something, you're doing a great job. And then I would say you can share with them. You don't have to go in like explicit detail if you don't want to. Once again, it's your personal experience. So like your comfortability level is definitely important, because it could feel awkward or be like, what's going on? And then, like you said, you automatically think like, have you done this? Are you trying it? Yeah. Which is like natural. But I would definitely say like you, I don't have a right answer to it. So like really just engaging. Because then like, if you do share too much, I'm pretty sure they'll let you know. They'll be like, ew, yeah. I did not need to know that. So I think it's really important. Like I think once I asked my mom a simple question, like, what were you doing when you were 17? Like what, my little sister turned 17. I was like, what were you doing when you were 17? She was like, I was with your dad. And I was like, you know, I can interpret that a couple ways, but like, I don't want to know. I'm done. No more questions.
That was it. I don't need to ask anymore. That's great. Okay. So I really hear this idea of like not oversharing, but mm-hmm. if your kid is coming to asking specific questions, honesty is the best way to go. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what if your kids aren't asking these questions to you? Then what do I do as a parent?
Like if they're not coming to you with these questions, but you know that they might be active or like interested.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would definitely say maybe just like sharing resources. So like if you feel like they might not be comfortable coming to you with this, you can just say like, no, hey, I saw this resource. You might be interested in it. I thought it was interesting. Like, take a look at it. On our Amaze website, whenever we release a new video, we have a more info section and we break it down for youth, educators, and parents. And for parents, we have something called conversation starters. And for educators, we have discussion questions. So we kind of like, based off of the video, tell you how you can like start a conversation with your child about it. And a lot of times it could just be like, hey, like I saw this video I liked today. This is what it's about. Do you want to watch it with me? Or like, I've noticed we haven't really talked about certain topics. We haven't really talked about like, if you're dating anyone, we haven't really talked about it. Like, if you're interested or what have you heard? Do you have sex ed? Like things in that nature. You can just start to like ask them the question and just see, because also, you know, children have lots of different sexual orientations and gender identity. So like a child that might not come to you is maybe because they're not experiencing certain feelings or certain wants or desires. So it's not that they're afraid to, it's just that they actually aren't coming to you because there's no interest at times. So I think like just maybe asking some questions, guided questions, or sharing resources could be there. And it kind of like opens the doorway of like, the door is open. You can come if you want to. I'm not forcing you or pushing you to.
Yeah. And I think about what you said about a lot of gender identity and sexual expression. Because kids, there's so much that kids could be experiencing around sexuality, and that, I mean, what have you seen that kids are kind of experiencing today around sexuality?
I would definitely say more sexual orientations that are outside of like just the acronym of like LGBTQ+AI and all those in that nature. I think the youth are in a space where they can define their sexual orientation or gender expression or gender identity more than a lot of people could in the past, because of just being able to like connect with people that share the similar identities as them. So I think that's definitely something that we're seeing. I definitely will say that we're seeing more, a lot of youth want more resources around being like aromantic or asexual, because a lot of times it's the opposite. It's like people who may not identify as that, and we're giving them that information, but not so much like how to navigate growing up as a child. Paying attention. So like your child might say like, oh, I feel like I'm demi girl or demi boy. And you're like, oh, I've never heard of this before. To some people, they might say that. But they might be familiar with more terms like transgender. So it's just like the youth at this point, they definitely have a wider vocabulary and a way to just describe all gender identities and expressions and sexual orientations. So that's something that we are making sure that we're keeping up with. And some of these terms aren't new. They're just like more used. And then some of them to me are a little bit new because I'm still learning.
As we all are. Mm-hmm. The terms are new to me as well. Okay. So what are kids learning about in schools today about this topic?
Depends on where they are. And some of them aren't learning much, but I'd say it's a hard question. Unfortunately, it's a hard question because we really don't know. Like, it really depends on where they are. So you have places like in Florida where there's the Don't Say Gay bill, and there's a ban on like just teaching about gender identity and sexual orientation. Lots of bans around like trans health for youth and education around that. Roe versus Wade got overturned. So lots of bans around having conversations about abortions and things of that nature. So I would say I don't know in total of everything that they're learning, but I do know what's missing, which is a lot of just comprehensive and inclusive and correct and honest at the head. So lots of things missing. In terms of what they're, in terms of like what is an overall curriculum. Because some states, it's not even an actual requirement. And even if it is a requirement, it's a very basic one that doesn't go into it. A lot of schools don't have dedicated staff who are trained in this. So they don't have like an actual sexual health teacher. It might be, the gym teacher who's trained in it or got trained in it, but this isn't their area of expertise. Or it might be the health teacher who does a topic on this, but like they don't get to go through the full courses. So the best way to explain that is when I used to come into schools, I'd come in at kind of contracted, and then I'd be in school for about 6 to 7 weeks. And each week is something different. So we'll say like anatomy, and now we're talking about consent and relationships, we're talking about pregnancy and reproduction, now we're talking about STIs, we're talking about barrier methods. And then we're talking about pleasure, we're talking like healthy relationships, and we're just intimate partner violence. Like there's so many different things, and a lot of schools don't get that. It's normally all of that lumped in one. So I would say they're not getting a lot. Definitely ending with they're not getting a lot of sex ed.
Which is why it's even more important for parents to talk to this or talk on this subject with their kids, because it puts them almost at risk to do their own research, like you said previously, and that's not always accurate information or realistic answers, so to speak.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I always sound like my job as an educator is to provide like accurate, honest, inclusive sex ed, but like a parent or a guardian or any like adult in a young person's life is like there to just provide a little bit more information and like really allow their kids like ask questions and then guide them to the right resources. So either that's guiding them back to me or any other resource, Amaze, once again, just any resource is definitely like how we keep it going, because it's literally it's a part of everyday life. It really is.
Yeah.
And as much as people say like it's not, it's like when you break it down and you take it outside of just engaging in sex, it's a part of everyday life. We all are in relationships. We all need consent for things. You just don't go up to someone and take their car. Like, we all need consent for everything. We all try to practice bodily autonomy. We hate when people tell us what to do and what not to do with our bodies. Like, all of these conversations and topics are part of everyday life.
Hmm. Yeah, which thinking about, like, you talking about consent and some media, like, how can we use media and movies to actually teach kids? Because we know they're watching it, right? So, like, how can we use those to really teach kids what's accurate and, learn from some of those movies?
Outside of, outside of media that's, like, created to, like, actually teach, like, Amaze created animation that's created to teach young people about sexuality education. Outside of that, I would say just, like, I know at one point, like, the Baymax show is very popular. I haven't really watched it. I should. The Baymax show on Disney Plus has been really popular, and a lot of educators have been talking about it because they show a wide range of different types of relationships. And then there's a one episode where the main character, she gets her period, and they talk about that. So I would say, like, if you are watching anything and you see a moment where, like, it was, like, accurately displayed or a real depiction of life, you can point that out so that they know, like, a basis of what to look like, look at, or what should be. But often we don't see that in media. So it's more so pointing out what isn't. So, like, if you're watching a movie, I'm trying to think of something that's common. I watch a lot of movies, so I should know. If you're, like, watching a movie and a person's walking down the street and, like, they're getting catcalled, or, like, someone, like, inappropriately touches their butt or something like that, you know, you can be like that person didn't ask their consent, or, like, oh, that's not it, like, that should not happen in real life, or things like that. And once again, it doesn't have to go into, like, lecture all the time, and then if I get tired of listening to you or, like, not wanting to watch any more movies or TV with you. Yeah. But just, like, pointing it out just a little bit, because even if it's a little annoying, you'll remember, like, oh, every time I watch a movie with my mom, she points out, like, that isn't it. And then when they see it in real life, they're going to remember that moment.
Yeah. And it's almost a great way to use media that you might not necessarily have control over, because I feel like the main message in a lot of movies is the girl says no, we keep pushing and chasing, and then she finally says yes, and then they live happily ever after. And I just think about, you know, the dangers of those messages. And so we can really use what you were saying about addressing some of those things in there while watching it with kids.
Yeah.
Okay. So just thinking about panic in parents. I can see parents right now going, oh my gosh, like, this is scary. I don't want to talk to my kids about this. Or, you know, how could parents come to a calmer place in order to handle it? That's not the right question I'm looking for. Help me out here.
What can parents do to manage their panic around this topic?
Yeah.
Good question. I would say, gather resources and, like, educate yourself. So, like, just, you don't have to, like, you know, get a certification and try to, like, become a sexuality educator, but you definitely can follow, like, we have an our Amaze Parents Instagram, and a lot of parents like that because they're up to date with any videos that we put out, or just we give them up to date information about what's going on in the sex ed world and the reproductive justice world. So we provide that information. So that's, like, kind of a lower lift. Like, if you are up to date as to what's going on, you won't be as terrified or maybe in a panic when sex comes up in a conversation or comes out of your child's mouth because they have a question about it or things in that nature. So I would just say, like, having, like, a little bit of resources, maybe, like, bookmarking a few pages, maybe reading a book on your own or just something of that nature, listening to the podcast, like, just small things that you can have in your toolkit or, like, underneath your belt so that when it is time or the conversations do start, that, like, there isn't so much panic. Because I think that, like, it's just ultimately always going to be there. I don't have any kids, but I have a niece and I have a lot of young people that I'm around. And even as an educator, sometimes I get a question and I'm like, oh my God, okay, how do I answer this? I don't even know how to answer this right now. But because I'm like, okay, I know a bit about this topic, I know what's accurate, I know it's what I can tell them, then I feel a little bit more equipped or a little bit more comfortable engaging in the conversation. So just really having, like, having resources that you can pull from and that you know, like, you trust them. So, like, even if you never liked anything on Amaze or you've never been to the website or you're not in the newsletter, you can still be like, you know, I do know of this organization that might have a question or have the answer to your question. We can go here and learn together if I don't already know the information.
Great.
Awesome.
All right. And our famous question that we ask every guest is, what is the best advice you'd give parents when talking to their kids about sex?
I would say the best advice would be to like let your kids know they can come to you for advice, like to vent or ask questions. Just like eliminating as much fear as possible for them to come to you. So I feel like when there's fear, when it's been very clear that your parents either don't want to have that conversation with you or it's just not something that it could be talked about, it's very easy to pivot and not even go that route and just like go to your peers or go to social media and rely on it in that way. So when there's less fear, and what I mean by like eliminating as much fear and letting them know like they can come to you is being mindful of like what you do and actually practice. So like if you're telling your child they can come to you with anything, but then they see how you react to maybe a hypothetical situation or something that's in a movie scene or like something that's trending, and they might have a question about it or are experiencing the same thing, and they see how you're reacting towards it, they might pick up on that and come to you. So I would say like just really being mindful, and it kind of ties into when I was saying like actually practice it in your home. Is one thing to teach and say things, but what we learn the most is from experience and practicing it. So if you're not practicing it and experiencing it in your household, there's a very small chance of it actually, your child actually like taking that and then practicing it in their own life. And then I would also say, I don't, you all probably don't have to worry about this, but I would definitely say like just giving, like allowing your children to know that they have autonomy over their bodies and self, like a sense of autonomy, knowing that you have autonomy really helps with like self-expression. So I know like some people, they're like, oh, I don't want my child to like dye their hair pink. And it's like, we can, cause I don't want them to mess up their hair or cause it's gonna be unhealthy. And then sometimes it's really just because like, they don't want them to wear pink. Cause for some reason they think of, I don't know, a 4-year-old dyeing their hair pink is grown. I don't understand that. So things in that nature is like allowing them to like express themselves and builds their sense of self, and also builds that connection with you that you trust them to make decisions for themselves. And because you're trusting them to make decisions for themselves, they trust you. And then as trust builds, they will continue to come to you because they know that you will accept them as how they want to show up or have been showing up. So that's probably like, yeah, advice for parents who want to talk to their kids about sex.
Amazing. Victoria, thank you so much for your wealth of knowledge. This has been incredible. And if people desire to get a hold of you or look for resources, where can they find you online?
Sure. So you can find us on YouTube is our biggest platform. So we're on YouTube. It's amaze.org. So amaze and then org, O-R-G. We release new videos every other Thursday. So we just released one of our newest videos, which is around menstruation stigma. So we just address all the stigma that's around menstruation and people who get periods. And that's like, it's probably my favorite video that came out most recently. And then you can also follow us on TikTok and on Twitter at amaze.org. We're revamping our Twitters and our TikTok. So we've been there and been more present. You can find us on Instagram at amazeparents. And then we also are on Facebook as well as amaze.org. And Amaze Parents. So we are there. When you get to our Amaze website, which is amaze.org, there are our videos. It's the more info sections that I talked about earlier. And then we also have newsletters. We have toolkits. You can create your own playlist, which is you can sign up and make like your My Amaze account and then go through all of our videos and then create your own playlist and then give that to your child, and your child can watch the videos that you approve. And then I would also say, oh, we have amazing youth ambassadors. So we have amazing youth ambassadors. They're between the age of 10 and 16, and they're with us kind of like throughout the whole school year. So we work with them and they promote us on their socials or on our organization-based socials. But it's kind of another way for us to like bring the information to youth, because at the end of the day, we know peer-to-peer education is the most efficient and fastest way to teach youth. So those are the best ways to find us. Me personally, if you have any questions, you can reach me at victoria.ogunleye, last name is O-G-U-N-L-E-Y-E, at advocatesforyouth.org.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Yes, thank you. It was amazing.
Thanks for listening to Uncensored Parenting. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Uncensored Parenting Podcast. We're out.
Electric Acid.
Welcome to Transforming 45, the podcast that celebrates the incredible power of passionate voices. I'm your host, Lisa Boat. Join me in conversation with heart-led humans who share their deeply personal stories of transformation. Transforming 45 is here to uplift, connect, and remind you that it's never too late to write your next chapter. So get ready to be inspired, empowered, and transformed. Join me in this community where through powerful storytelling, we heal and reclaim our inherent magic.
Electric Acid. Electric Acid.
Welcome to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonize your mind, body, and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together we explore vibrations, frequencies, and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress, and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today.